if you believe you're an investable person, someone will invest in you.
And that's
the thing. Like, I talk to people and they're like, oh, who will do it? If you think no one will do it, no one will. At that point, I was confident enough that, you know, I'd educated myself to a level where I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
That, you know, I had multiple backups that someone will invest in.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Property Strategist Podcast. You're here again with the boys.
Come on.
What are you about to say? How you lot doing?
All good, bro.
Yeah?
Yeah, man.
Busy as usual, all of that?
Always, bro. But we're alive, we're blessed. I'm favoured.
I feel landed.
Do you want to create another scripture? Anyways, we've got a very special guest in the building. We've got the main man himself, Ethan Hammond.
Come on.
What are you saying, my bro?
What's good?
How you doing?
What's good?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah?
Pleasure to be here. Right. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah. Come on.
It has been, yeah.
Long time coming.
I got the call up, what was it, last year?
Oh, yeah, that's a
good
one.
I've been warming up for a year.
I've been on the sideline, we're getting ready.
I just remember that now, you know.
Yeah. I've been warming up. Before even getting to all of that, just quickly tell us what a couple lines of who you are and what you do, and then we can dive straight in.
Yeah, so I'm a South London developer. Working on flips, BRRRs, just building my brand and entrepreneur.
Love that.
How old are you, bro, again?
I'm 24.
24 years old. Wow. That's amazing. That's even though we end the podcast there.
That's the end of that.
We leave from there.
There's a random one, by the way. Did you see that video of the kids that went into the guy's house?
Wow, that's very random.
That was very random.
Do you know
what the thing is? When I see stuff like that, I don't watch the full clip because I get secondhand.
I
watched the whole thing,
why
bro.
I wasn't sure.
And it had to be us.
Giving people more excuse, more armor.
Really hard.
That's very random still, but yeah.
I hear it, bro.
That annoys me.
It's in property.
It annoyed me so much. Anyways, but I guess starting from a back, like, let's take it back a couple of years now.
Yeah,
prior to property, what were you doing? Did you go uni? Was it like, was you working?
And what's your first introduction into property as well? What was your first introduction?
Yeah, so I'll start off with my first introduction to property. That was during uni. So I went to uni, I went to Birmingham, I studied chemistry.
Which Birmingham, by the way?
University of Birmingham.
Okay, cool.
So I went there for 3 years, studied chemistry. And then during that time, I always knew going into it that I wanted to get into property. Didn't really know how. I just kind of thought, you know, the notion of getting a job, saving up, and then buying a property. And then I think it was second year, read my first book. That was Property Investor for Beginners by Rob Moore. Okay. Rob Dix. Rob and Rob. Then, like, I just got addicted. I remember in second year, I started reading podcasts, everything. Wow. Like, at one point, I wasn't listening to music. It was just podcasts everywhere I go. I used to walk quite a bit to uni. It was like a 30-minute walk from my student.com. So I was just listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos, listening to you, man, all the time.
Wow.
So, yeah, literally that whole time, and then just went in, and then when I finished uni, I graduated in 2020. Then I went into a grad role. So I was like a business analyst, product manager. Did that for around 18.
So you didn't even use it to chemistry at that point?
No. Funny enough, my chemistry degree course was meant to be 4 years. And then, like, I opted to take the 3-year one because I was like, nah, I can't do this.
Too tough, or what
you want to do?
It was just too tough. And it wasn't even like too tough. It was like, I didn't really enjoy it as well. So I was like, I went into it. And then I was spending bare time in the labs and stuff.
This
ain't for me. And I remember speaking to my friends. I was like, you guys are here for 4 years. And they're like, yeah. So it's meant to be an
MSc.
Yeah, MSc. Yeah, it's meant to be MSc. So then I ended up just doing the 3 years and doing the BSc.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I went straight into kind of business. My whole thing was like, just find something that will pay you well so that you can go into property eventually. Okay, okay. That was kind
of
my thing.
Okay, cool.
Would you start any other businesses like whilst you're at uni or anything like that?
Yeah, I did. So whilst I was at uni, was it first year? So I started this thing called Better Body Sports, which is like a sports events company. Mm. So we delivered sports events across the Midlands. Wow. So that was like football events. Like we delivered it to like over like 500 people. It was really good. It was like, but essentially I had an app idea and it started off being a campaign for the app. So the app was essentially like a betting app. I don't like to say it, but yeah, it was a betting app. It was literally simply like, oh, if you said, oh, Man U are going to win and you said like West Ham are going to win, it's like, let's go onto the app. We both go onto the app, lock in our bets, and then, you know, it have the money in an escrow and send it to someone, whoever won the app.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, so
it's like peer-to-peer.
Yeah. So that was the initial, like, idea of the app. Then, like, I've literally, me and my boy Obed, like, we went in hard on this app. Mm. But thinking about it, it's so funny, like, we found a developer at uni, was paying him, like, all our student loans, getting money. We was just paying him to build this app. And then we were like, okay, it's towards the end now. Let's start the campaign. So the campaign was going to be football tournament. Started delivering football tournaments. Football tournaments kind of went mad. So we just kept on rolling. Mm-hmm. And then we realized that the app came. That was crap. We realized we got bumped. But then we realized that, you know, we'd built a community out of it. Okay. And like, let's keep this going. So we kept it going. And yeah, it was a passion project. Mm. And it was a big learning curve. Yeah. So I was delivering that.
I think I even saw a little bit of clip of it. I saw like you doing a football event tournament or something.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I think,
I saw it.
I don't know where I saw it, but
I saw something back in uni.
It was lit. Like it was. Yeah.
That's really interesting though, because obviously it sounds like this is what I do. Like, I'm an entrepreneur. I was thinking like that back in the days, but like where did that come from? Is that just who you are? Like, you know, trying to make money, like
that's been me. Just been trying to be resourceful, just trying to make money in all ways you can. Like literally from a child. Like, if I was speaking about it with my friends the other day, like even from year six, I've sold everything. You remember Shambhala's?
Yeah, I remember the Shambhala's. Shambhala's bracelets.
Literally, I used to sell Shambhala's, Jesus bracelets, snapbacks, everything. Even remember when the Blackberries are out, the phone cases, gel cases.
The gel thing.
I
remember that.
But like, what made property number one though? Like, what made you say, okay, I want to make all this money for property?
I knew it was going to be property because when I went to secondary school, right, I always say this, my friend, I went to his house and his dad, and I went to his house and it was the biggest house. Like where I went to like secondary school, it was quite like a affluent area, right? So I've gone to his house and bearing in mind, like from where I'm from, it's completely different. So I've gone to his house and I've looked at it and I'm like, wow, this house is a madness.
Yeah.
But back then I used to think terrace houses were big because I lived in a flat.
You got upstairs in the house.
I even remember in primary school, I used to go to my boy's house and he lived in a terrace house and I used to think,
just remember that foot in it.
You told me back.
The first time I saw stairs, I was like, stairs.
So imagine, so I've gone from seeing a terrace house is like, this is the biggest house. I used to think my boy there was rich because he lived in a terrace house. Then I've gone to his house and now we've gone from terrace to detached with land.
Hey, we started from the bottom, you know. I said detached.
Detached. As in,
with land.
With land, as in, the house is in the middle and there's land all the way around.
There's space around.
Yeah. I remember going to his house and I was fucking flipping heck. I was like, bro, like, his name was Cameron. I'm like, Cameron, what does your dad do? He's like, that's a property developer. I said, I was like,
how old were you when this happened?
So I would have been 12 or 11.
Wow, that's
year 7.
So that stuck.
Yeah. And like, since then, I've always been, okay, property development, that's where you're going to make money. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but it was always a thing. So as soon as I got the opportunity to like, you know, start getting a career, start thinking about things, like, okay, That's the thing.
So imagine if you're that young to see that and know, okay, this is where I want to go. Then you're that young to learn about mortgages. Yeah. Like, you're not too...
I'm not too sure about that.
You don't think so?
I don't think... Like, mortgage... I knew what it was there, but I don't know. Like, you don't think, let me go read up about it. I don't think I thought, let me go read up about it. Because I knew there's so much barriers to entry there, and it wasn't gonna make me money now. Yeah, I wanted money. Yeah, I wanted to make money now to buy like vans and shoes and kickers. Yeah, yeah. Do you get what I mean? Yeah, that's what I need. Yeah. I was a sneakerhead, so like I used to just, all the money I used to make from secondary school, I used to just blow on shoes, like just literally all in trainers, basically. Mm.
And then like, what made you go from the football business to transition into just wanting to do property and stuff like that?
When I realized that I just wasn't making money.
Like, it was passion.
It was a passion.
You're getting people through the door, I'm assuming. Like, you're getting people to come to the tournaments and stuff.
Yeah, like we was getting a lot. It wasn't mapping. Like, the business model was flawed in a sense that our incentive was a cash prize. Mm. So all the profits we was making, we was giving it to the winner.
It's also crazy. I did the same thing in uni, you know? I did the same business and the same thing at the end. Yeah? The cash prize was like £500 and then I didn't have to pay out like £300.
Yeah,
with your hands trembling. But like, you know, we didn't mean the whole 500. Whoever wins,
and that's literally what it was. And like bang. And I was just losing out because you're putting so much in and then you're only breaking even.
So
then, you know,
and everyone's saying to you, good job today.
That was sick.
Another one.
You go home looking up like
the math ain't like, it taught me a lot in terms of like, I got sponsorship from different people.
Wow.
That's when me and Aaron became good.
Okay, cool.
So he had like a clothing brand fitness business at the time. Yeah. And we had just met at a business event where we were both pitching our ideas.
Oh, wow.
So that's how we met. We met at a networking event to pitch. I was pitching Better Buddy and he was pitching his brand, fitness brand, Dank Fit at the time.
Yeah.
And then we started doing partnerships. So like we would give out t-shirts from his brand to like Man of the Match, top goal scorer, all them things like that. That's kind of how we formed the relationship based on that. So
talk to us about your first sort of property deal and what does that look like? Was it, because your story is quite interesting, because for some people, I know, like for myself, for example, starting rent to rent, dual sourcing, what was the first strategy that you came across? I said, okay, this one seems feasible for me. I want to try my hand at this one. I want to give, you know, get some experience.
Good question. For me, like, I did expose myself to dual sourcing, rent to rent early. Like, I remember third year when I was crazy over property, like, I was, like coming down from Birmingham, we was going to Watford, Luton to deal source, like rent to rent deals, try to find my first rent to rent deal and stuff. And it never really, like, nothing really happened. I remember we found a deal one time and we packaged it and then we went to go sell it and then we just got bumped. And then someone stole the deal.
Underneath the nose.
I just thought, damn. I remember he sent the text. He was like, oh, funny enough, I knew the state.
I don't think that $3,000-$4,000 done the drain.
Bro, I'd already planned what I was spending the money on. Like,
training.
Jordan, easy.
I said, yes. And then so I exposed myself to that. And doing that, I realized, okay, cool. What am I actually doing this for? Yeah. And it was for cash flow. And I had just got a grad job at the time. And I was like, I don't really need the cash flow right now. Yeah. So it kind of, and I'm not passionate about this. This is not why I wanted to come into property.
Yeah.
So I kind of said, let me take a step back and kind of go harder in terms of my education towards development and just go straight into development.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of how I just said, let me just take it, like, strategize my whole steps and my journey
on
property development.
So your first deal was a flip, I'm assuming then?
Yes, it was a BRRR.
Talk to us about it.
So that first deal, so how it came about was that obviously talking about property, telling everyone that you want to get into property, started trying to raise for finance. Then my friend's dad, from like way back, he had just like remortgaged his house, so he had some spare cash. Said that, you know, he's got 80 grand there, he wants to do something with it. And then I kind of jumped at the opportunity.
How the hell did you put yourself for at 21, 22, 23 telling me, uncle, I need that 80k, I'm only 23, but I'm making money.
Done my first property deal yet, but
it's fine.
Cool. Mm-hmm. But do you know what it is? It's just like, if you believe you're an investable person, someone will invest in you.
And that's
the thing. Like, I talk to people and they're like, oh, who will do it? If you think no one will do it, no one will. At that point, I was confident enough that, you know, I'd educated myself to a level where I knew what I was doing, that, you know, I had multiple backups that someone will invest in.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost, I used to think, like, you know, if he doesn't do this, he'd be silly. Mm. That's how I was literally thinking. Mm.
That's the mindset you got.
I was like, it's a no-brainer for you. Like, because we was going into on a JV.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, I'm going to be doing all the work. Yeah. I know everything. I didn't know everything, but, you know, I knew more than you knew to make this happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I can get this going and you wanted to see something happen. And I believed in myself that I could do it.
I think JVs for younger people, anyone that's, because I did my first, well, my second deal would have been a JV deal. I think for anyone that's a young person that wants to buy a first property, doing a JV is perfect. Like, maybe talk about how you structured that deal. Like, I mean, people hear JV, but how do you physically structure a deal like a JV like that?
Yeah, so a JV is a joint venture. So what we did, we set up a company to purchase the property. Mm. So we both 50% shareholders of that company. The JV partner put in all the funds for it, and we're both 50-50 shareholders. So all profits we split 50-50.
Exactly. So
yeah, that's just
so for your point of view, you just need to find a deal, project manage the deal from start to finish, and then when you get rent, you'll get 50%. If you look to sell or refinance, you get 50%.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And and that was my proof of concept. Mm. And I went, it's 80K, so it's not a lot. You can't do a lot down here.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, that takes me on to say that, like, my first deal was up north, and that was literally because of barrier to entry. Like, it was just so low. Houses, the house I remember, it was dirt cheap. It was like, to be precise, it was like 48K.
48?
Yeah.
What area was this?
It was Middlesbrough.
Oh, right.
So it was like
48. Did you do a video on that?
I did. I think I did a quick video on it.
I think I saw something a while ago.
Yeah, a while back, I did a short clip on it. I don't talk about it. Middlesbrough, like, long story.
Yeah.
So, but it's still up and running today. Like, it's a minimo. So it's a 48K, spent like 22K on it, refinanced it at like 85, 86K. Mm. Like, it did what it had to do. And that was my proof of concept. So during then is when I started documenting everything and kind of just showing everyone, like,
what was the challenges with that first deal? Like, because the good thing I'm starting to hear from you straight away, and I hear from all developers and property investors, just that resilience and stuff like that. I know you would have went through challenges in that first one. Like, what were some of the challenges?
Yeah. No, there was challenges, but funny enough, finding the actual deal wasn't as hard. That specific deal wasn't as hard going through with it. And I believe it wasn't as hard because, you know, because of my efforts prior to that moment, I felt like I was just being rewarded for all the hard work, all the times I've been bumped, all the times I've been gazumped, like, in that moment in time. Because I remember finding the deal and I put in an offer before I'd seen it. But I like to quite do this anyway, because I was like, if I'm going to make the trip, I don't want to make the trip all the way to Middlesbrough to put an offer in that's not going to get accepted.
So you need to know.
So I was like, let me put in the offer now. If it gets accepted, get accepted. I'm not legally binded to it.
Yeah.
So if I go up and it doesn't make sense, I just retract my offer.
Yeah.
So made the offer, got accepted. And then when I was going there on the first time up to see the property, I had arranged for like three different builders to see it.
With you, okay.
There, then I got three different quotes. You know that process, three different quotes. Then I went with a builder and they like project managed everything. So awesome. I think the refurb probably took like 6-7 weeks.
Yeah.
And I only,
not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. And
was
I went
a lot of work needed.
Yeah, like a lot of work. Like new roof. It needed new roof, new everything. Everything needed to
back
be
to
done.
Brick everything.
Yeah. Like 22K doesn't sound like a lot, but up there it goes back far. There.
Yeah.
Oh wow, yeah.
Like just up there because of labor costs and stuff. Like it goes far. It stretches. New kitchen, new bathroom. We installed a new bathroom, shower room. So it stretched and they did everything. I went up like three times in total.
Wow.
Yeah, like literally went up three times.
30 builder.
Yeah, it wasn't even, you say 30, but like,
oh, no.
When I started hearing leaks,
Big man, what's going on here?
But like at the time, like I was literally taking, I took every like their word for everything.
Yeah, you didn't know.
I didn't know anything. Yeah. Like, you know, they see something.
Oh, mate, this is gonna cost you another $2,000. Yeah. I hear that.
And they'd be like, I remember one time they, I saw plasterboard, like it wasn't the moisture resistant plasterboard was being used in the bathroom. Yeah. And I remember seeing it in a video. I was like, why aren't you using that? And he was like, oh yeah, you don't need to use it. You only need to use it in this certain circumstance. And I just okay.
Yeah,
do you get what I mean? Like just those little things that I didn't know, but. I learned a lot because when I was there, I was asking loads of questions.
Fair question, okay.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, it was good. It was, in terms of project management, it was quite easy.
Yeah.
I went there like three times and they sent me a lot of updates as well.
Oh, that's okay. Good, man. That really helps.
Okay, that's good.
So I guess, obviously, after that, then you must have felt, I've done this, da 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 da.
Yeah.
What's next and how did that transition for you to start doing whatever you did next, and what did you do next?
Yeah, so after that, because I had, you know, started documenting the journey, building the brand sort of thing, that's when I kind of thought, do I go back up? Which is, because it's easier to go back up. You know?
Cheaper, everything.
It's cheaper. I was like, do I go back up? Then I thought, what is the reason as to why I'm actually going up? I'm only going up because of a lack of access to capital.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's my problem. That's so I need issue. I need to solve that problem instead of just going up there.
Yeah, just for the sake of it.
I'm basically running away from my problem.
Yeah, for real.
So I was like, okay, cool. It is what it is. This is like South London. This is where I should be doing it, sort of thing. Because this is actually where I want to finish. So this is where I should kind of start.
Yeah.
And then through that, then I found a 1 to 2 bedroom flip that I found. It went off the market.
Yeah.
It came back on, went again. Then towards the finish, when I was finishing the first project, it came back on and I was like, oh, it must be it. Gone there again to view it, put in an offer in, and I got that. And then that, I had to raise 110K. I remember when I got the offer accepted, I had no money.
No money.
I didn't know how I was going to do it. I remember getting offer accepted and I was celebrating. And I thought, flip.
Hang on a minute.
And I remember like telling my boys, like, I need to raise. Because these are the times that you actually have to go out to raise it.
Yeah.
And I tell them, yeah, I need to raise 100 bags. And they're like, what? 100 bags. Everyone I told, and I was like, yeah, but I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
I used to just say, yeah. I was like, 100 bags. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
But everyone, their face, I was like, I tell them, yeah, I'm gonna do 100 bags. And they're like, how are you gonna do that?
Yeah.
Before you even get into how you did it, where did the confidence come from? Obviously, I know you
had the
first 80K from your friend's dad. Was that what kind of thing? No, I've done it before.
I feel like you told us,
Funny enough, so when I came out of uni, I joined Alfred's mastermind.
Alfred Jaddy's
mastermind. So like, when you surround yourself with people that are doing,
you think it's possible.
Somehow it just clicks in it.
You know, and like, you're jumping on a call with him every, and this guy is very, you know, you've spoken.
You see how serious Alfred is,
you get what I mean? So, In the sense that, you know, I'm speaking to him every week on this weekly mastermind.
Got you.
Like, it becomes in your head, like, he's telling you can do it. I can do it. Do you get what I mean? Then you're telling yourself you can do it, and it's possible. And everyone's doubting you, but you know you can do it because I can see someone doing it on the ground.
It's possible.
If someone can do it, I can do it too. That's kind of how I think. I was like, if someone can do it, I can do it too. So I was just telling everyone that, like, I'm going to do it though. And they'd be like, what? And I just said to myself, trust me, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm gonna do it, but trust, I did it. Just about.
Just about.
You know, how many times do you have a conversation about, like, sometimes we don't know how we're gonna do this thing?
When the pressure is on,
figure it out. Just figure it out.
That's why when
people ask you how you raise funds, when you say that, they think,
all right,
you're lucky for some. But
literally, some.
But practically, how did it actually happen? Yeah. Like, who called you? Who came? Was it your content? Did people come through the content?
I raised a lot through social media content. Amazing. Like, you raise a lot through Instagram.
That's a big one.
Just conversation. Like, I remember speaking to so many investors. Like, now I'm quite cutthroat with people.
Now it flips in it. There's a
waste of time.
Have you got the money or not?
And you can tell when they're going to bother you with the money as well. So you're like, you know what? Just keep the money.
I can tell in the first 2 minutes.
Because
a real investor, right? They don't even ask certain questions and they will give you a yes or no on the phone. They have to think about it.
I'm sure you've been in a conversation, like, phone conversation for like 20, 30 minutes, just going through the ropes and trying to raise money.
They're not going to invest, actually. So it was a lot of my lead generation was from LinkedIn. I was placed on LinkedIn, Instagram, just like my immediate circle who had funds around me. And when I first started out, I was taking anything. I was taking 5K,
10K.
5K, 10K.
Two grand.
And that was...
Bad bills. Just put it all together like this.
And the funny thing is, like, I'd put that on my story. Someone would arrange a whole meeting. I'd go for the thing. And then they'd say, I've got 5 bills.
I've been there.
What are you gonna do with? Oh.
50 pound interest. Yes.
Hey.
Don't even laugh. It used to drive me insane, but I did it. And the thing is, doing all of that, it wasn't a problem until, you know, the solicitors start asking you, where did you get all the money?
Yeah, that part. Yeah.
And then you get to the point where it's like, okay, so how do I go to the 10 people I've just raised?
To show me.
You just look like a mad person.
So, like, yeah, that was a stressful.
I think out of all the process, that's probably the part that
can get a bit. Obviously, raising the money is one problem. This is where I got the money from.
Yeah. And it's like, that's why it's better to just take larger sums from.
Exactly.
Because then you just go to them and say, okay, can you sign this statutory declaration?
Easier to manage.
Easier to manage. So it's too much headache. Because at that time,
But you were very organized from the start, though. Like, you were going up there, you were making sure that you were putting in an order first so your time's not wasted. You were making sure that you had builders to meet you there to go to the site. Like, you were very structured. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Give yourself credit for that, too.
Yeah. And, like, you know, for me, I feel like I'm the type of person, if I see someone ahead of me, just listen to them. Do you know what I mean? Just listen to them. You know when you're trying to advise someone and they're not listening to you, like, why would you not listen to them?
What I'm saying right now is
can help you.
And I'm a person, if I think someone's better than me, done it before, just listen. And whereas I was in the mastermind group, I'm just listening. I had nothing to say in those mastermind groups. I used to just absorb everything. I had no deals, no nothing. I was just on that call. I'd have my camera on, just listening to every question that person whoever said and then, as you know, I started looking at deal analyzing and stuff like that, then I'm asking my question, but whatever they say, I just take it, I'd run with it.
Have you ever had some, like, one of those, because I've had this a few times, you had the road man just call you and say, Ethan, bro, I've got 50 bags.
Bro, do you know what we call him, man? We call him the yo man.
Yo. We call him
yo. 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 I was learning about the yo, bro.
Yo. Hey, you, man. Yeah, man. I can't tell you where I got this piece from. I can't really tell you where I got this piece from, but it's about 100 bags there.
Yo, man.
You're just like, keep that money. We want to just have that money. I want it.
Those guys are the yo men. It's yo, bro. What are you saying? Long time. I'm trying to get what you're on. Yo, bro, put me on. Yo, bro, what are you saying? You can take 20k in cash? No.
That's not what
I cannot take 20k in cash.
I'm sure other communities that have this problem.
But you know what the thing is? I'm actually insulted when people do that. You genuinely think I'm going to take that? Bro. Like, what do you think of me?
It annoys me so much.
But it's like, it's hard finding someone that's relatable or that looks like you in the property field. Like, there's not a lot of us out there. So
What made you start documenting your stuff, like, uncut? Not just the property, because everyone does property in a way now these days, but it's like the lifestyle. Do you know what I'm saying? You did it with a bit of sauce, you know what I mean, with it? What made you do that? What made you do that?
I thought it'd be easier to do it, and it helped me do it for, like, I'd be able to be consistent with it to a certain degree because I knew I wasn't pretending.
Yeah.
And I remember when I went up, because I was meant to even, like, start YouTube, like, the year before I started it, when I went up to Middlesbrough, and I remember taking content, and I was trying to be professional.
Hey, my name's Ethan Hammond.
And then when I was looking at it, I was like, this isn't even me. And I was like, okay, cool. They're just going to take me for me. And, like, when I started listening to people and they're talking about personal branding, and it's like people buy into you as a person. And then I thought, you know what? Like, I have a lot of friends anyway, so these guys must buy into me. So some people on the internet must buy into
me.
So I kind of just went through the whole thing of just be yourself. And just be yourself. And it will encourage other people like you to get into property. Good. And that's like same thing, like seeing you guys listen to your podcast. You're like, I'm listening. I'm like, these guys are just like me.
Yeah.
It's credit to you guys as well. Like, it just encourages the next person. So, and I get loads of DMs about that. Like, just, you know, having a good balance in terms of, you know, I'm in property, but I'm still young.
For real. Yeah.
That's how he's in Dubai. Yeah, man.
Young and lit. Just to take it back, though, you were talking about, obviously, you started after the Middlesbrough, you started doing 1-2 bed conversions. For people that don't know what that is, how do you structure, what is that, basically?
Yeah, so essentially, the 1-2 bedroom conversion is essentially when you take a large 1-bedroom flat and you reconfigure it. When I mean reconfigure, you position, like, the kitchen, relocate it somewhere to create an extra bedroom to kind of maximize that uplift in value.
And
especially in London, if you're going from like a one bed to a two bed, there's like a 100K uplift on just an extra bedroom.
Because
you're exposing it to a whole new market. You've got young families, young couples, all those, that whole market there. So yeah, so that's essentially what a one to two bedroom.
Are you able to talk about a little bit numbers and also like exit strategies for those deals as well?
Yeah, so I'll use my first one as an example. So that was 170K. It was
cheap. In London?
It's cheap. What? It's cheap. And I'll tell you. Yeah, purchase price. And I'll tell you why it's cheap. It had a low lease, it had damp, it needed to be reconfigured.
You did not go. You went straight for the hard ones.
And I remember like going into it. I just, do you know what? It's just self-belief as well. If you tell yourself you could do it, your mind will find a way to make you do it.
Figure out a way to do it.
So I went to do that one to two bedroom conversion. So it was 170 purchase price. It had a low lease, needed to extend the lease for another 30K. And then legals, stamp duty, everything, probably like 210. Then I spent 40K on the refurb. That gave me to like 250. Then I spent like on fees, like costs of bridging,
everything like that.
That was like another 15K or something. Then I sold it for 315 or something.
That's the profit.
Breakdown is on your YouTube as well.
I've got a full breakdown.
Go check out the video, I've been quite open with it, which I think is key.
So even with that specific deal, looking at like say the lease extension, what does that process look like for the listeners? Like, do you know how much it's going to cost from the get-go, like from day one, or is it like...
Roundabout estimate, or...
Funny enough, like even with that whole lease thing, like it was even a whole situation in itself. So I remember it had a low lease. I knew I needed to get the...
How many years is low lease, by the way?
Anything
less than 80, I think.
Yeah, 73, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's 73 to be precise. So it had a low lease. The lease needed to be extended, but I needed permission... consent from the freeholder to do the reconfiguration, the conversion to the one to two. And I remember speaking to the agents, right? And then the buyer was like, the seller, I was like, can I get in contact with the freeholder before I go through with this? And they were like, well, because of the price you're buying it at, because I went low and I was kind of hard on them. I was like, I want this so much. And they were like, yeah, well, if you're going to need to do that, we're not going to give it to you at that price. We want to give it to you at a bit more of a premium. If you're going to get the permission.
Before completion.
These guys just about their money,
they're like, oh yeah, we're not going to sell it to you at 170 if you're going to go to the freeholder and get a yes or no. You either take it as it is or not. And I said,
that's a bit wild, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't even go around them, can you?
Oh, yeah, you can.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you can.
I said,
I can't speak to the freeholder. I was like, say nothing. I was like, go on land bridge.
Yeah.
I went on land bridge. I searched the freeholder, went to company's house, found out his home address. And I went to his house. I went to the house.
That's how you do it. And it
was literally the next day after I got the deal accepted. I remember I wore my work clothes, I went there. I wore my glasses as well. I was like, hi, my name's Ethan Hammond. I'm looking to buy your leasehold property at blah, 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 blah. I just would like some consent from you to do these. And I had printed out my proposed plans. I was like, I'm just trying to, change it from a one bed into two bedroom. These are the plans. Just sign it. I was like, please, can you sign it? She was like, oh, it's my husband's not in at the moment, blah, blah, he'll be back. And then, so I left, they gave me a call, and I told him, and he was like, yeah, it should be fine. He was like, as long as you're not knocking down any structural walls and stuff. And I was like, yeah, and I'm not. It's just literally an internal reconfiguration. And then he was like, yeah, that's fine. So that was enough for me. And then I went back to the agent, but I didn't tell them that I'd gone to the house. I was like, you know what? I'm going to take this risk.
That's the little tip for people as well.
Don't take no's. I'm literally a door knocker. I'll bust that door open and get what I want.
Was it like a mansion? Like, was this?
Yeah, it was a big house. I remember going in the house thinking, damn.
Yeah.
And then and he was cool. And then since then, and then what I did after, so later on when it came to the sale, they needed some sort of written document from them to give consent. And like even going about that, I just tried to make it as quick as possible for them. So I just typed up a letter. It was like, I freeholder or blah 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 give Ethan permission to reconfigure as per drawings below.
Yeah.
made a DocuSign, sent it over to them, and they just signed it on DocuSign. Wow. And that was my consent.
Nothing sexy, nothing.
That was it. Gave it to the solicitors. They were happy with it. And yeah, I used that to complete this song.
And the thing is, nothing can teach you this. You just have to be in it and figure it out.
Do you get what I mean? There's only so much you can learn. Even when I got to that stage, I was like, where can I even search? How do I even come about it?
Where do I start?
Yeah, you just have to kind of get creative and just know you're not going to take any notice.
It's important, because the reason I brought it up was because a lot of people will see content out there, your content, other contents, 1 to 2 bit conversion. It makes sense, innit? But there's other bits to it that you don't know about.
And there's little things. Yeah,
imagine buying a one bed now, you can't.
How big was, in terms of square meters, how big was the...
I look for anything over 55. Mm. Okay. So that was 55, 56. Okay. That's what I look for. But like over 50, but then again, I always say like, you have to, properties about reverse engineering in terms of who's your end market, who's your target market, work backwards towards it. Because 55, that's where I am in South London, right? Mm. But then if you go inner London, they're happy with a 2 bed with 50 square meters. 49, because they're buying it for the postcode, not for the
big location, so they can get to the train, to work,
they're
back.
Not buying it for massive rooms. And it's the same thing, like, if someone's going to spend 300 grand on a 2 bedroom flat in this area, what do they want? And that's the benefits of, you know, investing where you are, because you know exactly.
It's just numbers, isn't it? It's just numbers. I mean, literally, you said the only barrier to entry was raising the capital. Exactly. And that was it. Other than that, it's just, again, the same... things that you use in other areas.
Because I know my area like off the back of my hand. Exactly. Like, there's certain roads I just wouldn't even touch. And that's just me personally. But then someone else may come to my area and happily buy on that road because they don't know certain things about that road.
100%, man. Bro,
I guess in regards to the lease extension as well, how does that work? Is it, how do you know how much it's going to cost from the is that the solicitor? Was it the freeholder that told you? Or?
Yeah, so firstly, when I knew it was a... I knew it needed a needed a lease extension. Asked the estate agents, how much roughly? They give you a rough figure, but I always go like, has it been valued? Because, you know, that's just a ballpark figure. And then it had been in that case, already had the lease extension valuation. So they sent me the documents to that and I saw, okay, it was 28 grand extend the lease.
And for the drawings as well, for the 1 to 2 beds, is it you typically that will look, and how do you like to do your 1 to 2 bed conversion? Do you do open plan kitchen, double, how do you prefer to do your conversion?
I do open plan kitchen, literally open plan kitchen, but I'm a thing of, I don't like to overthink that thing, because there's an expert that will be able
I hear it.
I knew roughly it's gonna go there, but then I just get the architect to come in.
Leave it to them.
I'm very much like that as well.
Do you get what I mean? Let them figure it out.
Leave it to the experts to do their job. I'm not gonna try and do his job, because you're gonna spend time and energy to come out with a half good product. You try to cut corners and not go
for real.
Two more questions quickly. I saw a post that you said, I think you said you left your job, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're working full time. Why'd you decide to make that decision?
How's it been, bro?
How's it been? You can be real with us. It's not easy.
It's been tough. So I left my job last year, June. So I was on a grad scheme. I was due to finish the grad scheme in like September, October to go into the permanent role. And I remember just being there. And then I think it was when I sold my first deal and I made like 50K profit. I was like, this is more than what I'm even earning. I was like, this is making sense. So for me, it was like, okay, I can stay in my job, take 5 years to get to where I want to be, or I could quit now and essentially scale in the next 2 to 3 years, and, you know. And I'll just have to firm it
for now, innit?
Firm it for now. But I know 2 years I'm gone.
I'm gone. You can't catch me, boy.
I'm just saying, 2 years I'm gone. So just firm it for now. And it was hard because I remember I had 6 months savings. I was like, okay, I'm going to have 6 months because I'm going to have other money coming in. But 6 months is what my safety net was that went in like 3 months because I quit in June, so it was summer. So it was like I was going out every week.
I was doing Danky. This, that.
I was there. I was
popping bottles. 50K. What are you saying now?
And then I thought, damn, and bearing in mind, right, this is a key thing to also say, like, you're in so much debt as a property manager.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Talk about that.
You've emptied your credit cards. You've maxed your Amex. You've maxed every single thing. Like, and then I'm thinking, okay, I remember thinking to myself, I said, all right. I was like, I've only got 2 months left of this money and I've got debt, a lot of debt. Like, I'm pissed.
Yeah, for real.
And yeah, so it's been hard, but then it's just, that's when the entrepreneurial side starts coming in. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. How can I make
money from this side? Yeah, yeah, do this.
And worst case, you can always go back as well.
And that's exactly what I always said. And I moved out when I was, when I was like 22 as well. Yeah. So when I got my grad job and stuff, I moved out. Oh, okay, so I was in an apartment as well. So I had rent to pay, I had car finance to pay, bills to pay, everything. Yeah. And I said, when I quit, I was like, worst case scenario, let's go back to mum's.
Yeah.
And I've got no shame doing that because I think I'd regret not quitting and just being in my job unhappy rather than doing it and knowing it didn't work. So I was like, you know what? Just, I'm going to go all in. Just do what I can, find different streams of income and just make it work. That's it. But it's been hard.
Yeah, yeah, facts. And just to quickly to the Gen Zers, because you're a Gen Zer, a proper advice to them, couple gems for them quickly as we leave. Like, advice on becoming an entrepreneur, developer, couple of gems for them. What would you say to them?
Don't take no's. Like, my thing is resilience and tenacity. Like, that is what will separate, the real winners, from people that are just trying to do it. Do you get what I mean? Yeah. Because what I've realized is that you go through, as you said, like, you just go through so many trials, and it's how you come out of that will determine what you're gonna do. When you're not finding any deals, that doesn't mean you sulk and just say, I can't find any deals. It just means you just go harder and you just keep going. When you have challenges, and just use your network and try to find a blueprint, someone that's ahead of you, and just copy them. I study so many people that are ahead of me. I study. I'm like, what do they do? What are their streams of income? How are they moving? Like, what projects are they going into? Because every problem that you've gone through, someone's already gone through it.
Yeah,
don't cry and sulk. Just surround yourself with people that are ahead of you, and it will help you win.
100%, bro. Thank you so much, man, for coming through. Honestly, bro.
No.
But honestly, bro, I know you say podcasts helped you, but even us lot, I see your stuff on YouTube. So much motivation. How many times you messaged me and we said, yo, Ethan's doing this thing. Let's keep doing our thing. Paddy's doing this thing. Let's keep doing our thing. Alfie's doing this thing. So, like, trust me, even you feeding back into us. We appreciate you. Appreciate what you're doing. More and more to come. Trust me. 10 years time, billionaire. But yeah, man. Thanks for listening, guys. Stay blessed. Oh, sorry. Where'd you find you? Where'd you find you, bro?
So it's on YouTube, it's Ethan Hammond, and Instagram, Ethan X Hammond, and LinkedIn, Ethan Hammond.
Mad. Nice. Thanks for listening. Nice. Thanks for coming through, bro. Until next time, guys. Come on. Stay blessed, stay invested.
Peace.